our community connection brought to you this morning by First Baptist Church. I get the opportunity to spend a little bit of time with Melissa Jenkins this morning, a community advocate for all kinds of measures, and we're going to address at least a couple of them this morning. Starting off with the Suicide Prevention Coalition, been around now for, I'm trying to remember, about 5 years. Really, I think, making a significant impact. More to do? Sure, but nice to talk to you this morning.
Thank you, Charlie. It's so great to be here and talk with you about such an important topic.
It is. And I know you came to us about 5 years ago, along with the rest of the coalition members, said, Washington County's suicide rate basically twice the national average. We got to do something. We're making a difference, but there's more to do.
Yes, I'm amazed at how good you remember those things. And, you know, the thing is, no matter how hard we try right now, which is important to raise awareness about the issue of suicide, the fact is that death by suicide remains in the top 10 causes of death in Washington County. So wow. We need to take action on that.
Well, it's something that I'm sorry we even have to keep track of that number, but it's out there. And as you have said in the past, it's not limited to any particular age, demographic of any kind, economic, social, whatever. It kind of hits people across the board, regardless of who we are.
Yes, and I think that the more we do trainings in our community, and the more we ask people, have you ever known anyone that died by suicide, or have you ever known anyone that had attempted or even had thoughts of suicide, and practically everyone in the room raises their hand. So mm-hmm. It's actually an issue, I think, that's around us. It's just that we don't feel comfortable talking about it, and we need to change that.
Yeah, and that's kind of what you and I think the coalition members have tried to do, is get the conversation started and say, you know, this is not something that we avoid talking about. I mean, it's probably not something you want to bring up in every situation, but we should be talking about it as a society and to each other.
Yes, and one of the important strategies is that we understand and recognize the warning signs that someone might be suicidal. And I'd like to share just a little bit about the kinds of things we can look for and begin to ask people about to get them to help. For example, what we call direct communication about suicide is when someone actually comes out and says, I life just isn't worth living. I think I just want to end it all. That's what we call very direct. And yeah. You're more likely not to get that.
If they're that specific, I think nearly anybody could take them by the hand and say, we need to go talk to somebody right now.
Yes, and I think that's what's so critical. The other thing is that more often we'll get what we call indirect cues about it. So this is where someone might say, you know, I'm tired of life. I wish I could just go to sleep and never wake up. The world would be better off without me. These are really indications that someone is depressed, for one, and they really are thinking that, and we need to take that seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, things that aren't helpful, and sometimes they do come out of our mouths, but I want our community to really think about this, is when people say, oh, you wouldn't do that, or you just want attention. That's something I hear a lot.
Well, I think it's a response because someone, I think, doesn't know what else to say.
I agree with you totally. And sometimes people don't even say anything because yeah. It frightens them. They don't know how to respond. And so we really want people to learn how to begin to be not so frightened, but be more confident in their ability to just listen and be present with someone.
Mm-hmm. So a more appropriate response might be, gee, what makes you feel that way, or tell me more, or something like that?
Absolutely. You're exactly right. It's listening without judgment. That's so critical. And I think anyone can really do that. They can notice in someone, you know, you just seem like you're in a lot of hurt, a lot of psychological pain right now. Tell me about that. And more than likely, they're going to tell you because they feel like they can trust you.
Okay. And it's just a matter of, and I know this is oversimplification, but, you know, it's a matter of, you've used the words before, be a friend. Be somebody that they feel comfortable talking to.
Oh, I love the way you say that, Charlie. Absolutely, be a friend to someone. Caring makes all the difference in the world, and we have to remember that when people get in this way of thinking, they really aren't thinking clearly, and they need some people around them to help them get through the crisis. And so suicide is typically not just a super impulsive act. It builds over time, and sometimes it can be days, weeks, but when someone begins to really be tipped over the edge on a crisis, we think of it like a cup of water that's filled to the brim. So all these things have been churning in their life, and then one more thing happens and then it spills over. And it's that crisis moment that they're really in need of a caring friend.
Okay, so that one extra drop of water may have been the drop of water that made everything spill, but they've been thinking about this probably for some time now.
Yes, more than likely. However, you know, we typically look at around 3 weeks or so. Research isn't just perfect on it. We do the best we can. However, our goal is to get them through that crisis, to get them to someone that can help. And we always have what we call our National Suicide Prevention Hotline number. Mm-hmm. And that's 1-800-273-TALK or 8255. And I think when I do trainings anyway, we give out the number so people can just put it in their pocket or their wallet, because you can always, when you're with your friend and maybe you're not quite sure what to say, you can say, you know what, I have this number, let's call together. And then you have a trained crisis professional that can talk with them.
So you can go ahead and make it a contact in your cell phone if that's something, you know, who doesn't have their cell phone with them
anymore?
That's
a great, yes, just put it right in there and then you always have it right there.
Yeah, I know you're talking about the warning signs, and so I'm sure sometimes even what you said as far as, you know, life just doesn't seem, the indirect signs, can, they're probably even more indirect than some of the things you already said.
Yes, and some other things are, for example, when someone begins to not care anymore, they may give away things that are really important to them. That's kind of what we call giving away prized possessions, or saying goodbye, giving away things, and then even saying, you know, I'm pretty soon you're not going to have to worry about me. And so that's another sign that something's going on there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we've noticed that, of course, there can be all kinds of triggers, but relationships tend to be a very big trigger for people when they've been in a major breakup situation, their family breaks up, they've lost someone that's really important to them. And another, it's a risk factor. It doesn't mean that we're going to hurt ourselves, but it is a risk factor when we've had a family member die by suicide. Mm-hmm. You know, it just increases our risk a little bit.
Okay, yeah, so if aunt, if cousin, if close sibling even commit suicide, then that increases our risk of something we might do?
Yes, in addition to if we've actually attempted in the past. Those are just things we want to be aware of if we can, and watch out for. And the other big piece of this is learning how to cope through times of crisis, and, you know, developing a safety net around us. And I think that's what a lot of suicide prevention is about when someone is in a crisis, is building that safety net of people around them. It could be their faith community, their friends, their relatives, their work. Building a safety net of people around them that they know really love and care about them can truly help, because, as I've said, we're just not thinking clearly.
Does that increase the responsibility of all of us to be more mindful when somebody is putting out these cues? Because, I mean, we all go through life basically unaware of what's going around us much of the time. So we have to be actively looking for some of these cues, right?
I think we definitely do. And, you know, we may be just the one to make that huge difference. I don't know if you remember Kevin Hines when he came and spoke. And Kevin jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge and survived, yeah. Which is very rare.
Yeah. I love the way he told that story about, you know, I think it was 3 feet off the bridge, realized, I don't want to do this.
Yes.
Sorry, you're in the air.
Yes. And before he did that jump, he looked around and he said, kind of, God, if anybody just smiles at me. And a lady came up to him and asked him to take a picture of her. And so he did take the picture, but no, you know, there wasn't like this interaction. It was just take the picture. And that was the thing. When you were saying being aware of these signs, sometimes we might be that smile or just that warm presence that might make the difference in changing someone's mind.
But if I'm already having a rotten day and you walk up and say whatever it is you're going to say, chances are I'm not going to pay any attention. So somebody else needs to be looking out too.
Yeah, I think we call it building a network in our community, so that we train people, and the training we do is called Question, Persuade, and Refer. And it's very intentional training on how to recognize the warning signs, how to ask someone if they're thinking about killing themselves, how to persuade them to stay alive and get help, and then how to refer them to that help. And the more people we have trained in the community, the fewer adverse events we should have.
And I think the more people that take the training, the easier it is going to be for us to say those words, because I think those are tough words for people to say the first time we say it, even in a training situation.
Yes, and the thing is, we are 5 times more likely to use our QPR training than our CPR. We definitely need CPR, but the idea is that we're probably going to come across a lot more people that are experiencing a suicidal crisis.
Well, I know you've got a training event coming up in the fall, but this is still spring. How can people get into a training situation now?
Yes, right. QPR is offered free to anyone that's interested. We go everywhere to do it. We can do it in a Sunday school class. We can do it at a civic group. It takes about an hour. All anyone needs to do is call us. The Washington County Wellness Initiative has a website. It's www.wcwiok.org.
Okay.
Our phone number is 918-876-3056. Then we also have a Facebook page. The Washington County Suicide Prevention Coalition has a Facebook page. On the Wellness Initiative, we have what's called work groups, mm-hmm. and then it says need support. And when you click on that, you get like 11 different initiatives that are in our community working on some different type of project. One is the Suicide Prevention Coalition. But we do have, it takes you right to the Suicide Prevention Facebook page and right to the Suicide Prevention website as well. Okay. So there's a few different ways to find us.
Sounds great. And sign your Sunday school group up, sign your neighborhood up to take the training, and everybody hopefully will be better off.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a break and continue with Melissa in just a moment on 1400 K1.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church is focused on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
AM 1400, 93.3 FM, K1 Community Connection, and we're changing slightly. There's still an initiative on wellness issues, but Oklahoma, and I've seen national level initiatives coming out as well. Opioid abuse has, kids have always, I think, raided grandma's medicine cabinet and gotten whatever they could get out of it, usually something hopefully that they were looking for. I don't mean hopefully, but that they were looking for to get high on. But you can also find painkillers in there and just numb yourself out real well.
Absolutely. And this is another big project that we're working on to save lives. Just as when we discovered that suicide was in the top 10 leading causes of death, we've also discovered that it's called an opioid, or mm-hmm. It's painkillers, and it has become such a public health epidemic that since 1999, our death rate has basically quadrupled.
Well, the FDA has always taken them seriously as far as controlled medications. Typically, we're talking what you're talking about, Schedule 3 drugs, sometimes Schedule 4 or Schedule 2. The doctor has to actually have you get a handwritten prescription as opposed to, emailing it into the pharmacy or whatever. In past years, they had to be a carbon copy, 5-copy form, that one copy went to the FDA, one went to the state, the pharmacy kept this copy and that copy. Having grown up in a pharmacy, I knew all that stuff. But it's always been controlled, but once it got dispensed to the patient, then it was out of the FDA, out of the pharmacist's hands, and who knows how long they sat around the house.
Yes, you always amaze me, Charlie. That's exactly right. And the thing is I think an unintentional consequence is that we didn't realize how addictive these painkillers are. And we're talking about things like hydrocodone, morphine, oxycodone, fentanyl. These are
even
very...
Even the older cough syrups with codeine. I mean,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. We've been studying this so much more, the National Institutes of Health. And what we're discovering is that 50% of the people who are given a 30-day prescription of an opioid painkiller are still taking that prescription 3 years later. And this is just happening more and more and more.
Yeah.
And when you talked about, as with suicide, there is definitely no particular income, race. This is affecting all of us.
Oh, my wife had a tooth pulled a number of years ago, and I think the dentist, with the best of intentions, by the way, probably prescribed like 25 pills. And I think, you know, my wife reacts very more usually than more people to painkillers, so she took maybe one or two. So there were 20 more pills still sitting in that pill bottle when she was done taking them. And most people don't properly dispose of them either.
Right. So one, there's several strategies that you just even mentioned right there. So one is raising awareness about the issue of painkillers so that our community understands that when taken correctly to in a responsible manner, hopefully that lessens our risk. However, even sometimes then it can be a problem. But in addition to that, then we have all these medications in our medicine cabinets or in our shelf in our kitchen, and people don't realize that even in open houses, that because the drugs are so addictive, these painkillers, that once their prescription runs out and they're still craving the medication and they can't get any more refills, they become in a desperate situation. So they may go to different means to be able to get this medication. One is going to heroin, which is a lot cheaper now and more available. Mm-hmm. We have a prescription monitoring drug program, which is helping keep track of things. But so safely disposing, the first thing is, right, we should put our medications in a safe. That we are doing some initiatives. You'll be hearing a lot more about this. We're hoping to be able to give away some safes. The other thing is something very simple that you can do that a lot of us didn't grow up with this. I mean, we didn't realize the impact of flushing medications down the toilet,
right,
how it impacts our water systems. However, you can dispose of medications. There's a medication drop box at the police department,
right,
for one.
Yeah.
But also
last,
things
last
like,
month with the household hazardous,
yes,
recycling, they accepted medications. Early, I think it was last week, Popkus Pharmacy had opportunity for people to turn their meds back in. And I know the National Prescription Drug Take Back Day was last week as well, so, or 2 weeks ago. So there are initiatives out there for people to get rid of this.
That's right. And we will have a Take Back Day at the summit on September 7th as well with the suicide prevention. So one, there's a couple of ways that are pretty simple that you can dispose of your medications. You can use coffee grounds, mm-hmm, put them in a little plastic bag and put your meds in it, and it will break down those medications, as well as kitty litter.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things like that can be done when you don't have access. I mean, our county's rural. It's sometimes hard when you're way out in the country,
sure,
to be able to get in and get those medications properly disposed of. But it is important.
And most pharmacies typically, in their defense, don't have the means to dispose of them anyway, because they're passing them out to you fresh. They rarely exceed their shelf life in the pharmacy. So
that's right. But I do think our community will begin to see a lot more opportunities for drug take backs.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. So this is something that probably we will hear more about through health department, through the drug task force, and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Right now, the Washington County Wellness Initiative is in a partnership with the Cherokee Nation, and the Cherokee Nation is very serious and aggressive about doing something to save lives.
And they filed a lawsuit on it.
Yes, they did. I saw that lawsuit. They're just losing too many. We all are. We've lost 71 people just in from that was from 2007 to 2015.
And opioids are a means, I'm sure, that is used for suicide, tying it back to the topic we had before the break.
Yes, absolutely. You know, one is intentional and one is unintentional, and we want to help both of those things. But what I want to share with you is that 7 out of 10 unintentional poisoning deaths involved a prescription drug, and 6 out of those 10 deaths involved a prescription painkiller. Males were more likely to die from an unintentional poisoning than females, and adults ages 35 to 54 had the highest rate of unintentional poisoning death, and that's here. That's all local to Washington County. At one time, we actually, according to the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics, had the second highest overdose death rate according to our population. Mm-hmm. So it is certainly something we have to pay attention to. And the other thing that I found very interesting, I recently attended the National Prescription Drug Abuse and Heroin Summit
in
Atlanta.
And you were talking about that before we went on the air, some fairly high horsepower folks were involved in that.
Yes, it is a national crisis, so there's a lot of national folks really coming to the platform on that. Representative he's from Kentucky, but Kentucky's been very hit very hard. Mm-hmm. But what we're finding are a lot of congressmen coming together, bipartisan, to work together to fight this. We had Newt Gingrich and Patrick Kennedy on stage together, working together very closely to fight this epidemic.
Two people that politically may disagree a lot, but they came together on an issue.
Oh, it was wonderful. Yeah. And that's what we saw all throughout the conference. And the Surgeon General spoke, and it really helped encourage us that the amount of research that's going in to look at the brain disease of addiction, they really are classifying it as substance use disorder, mental health disorders, as a chronic disease like diabetes and heart disease, which, again, you hope can help alleviate the awful stigma associated with it.
Yeah. The EMTs, medical professionals, do have drugs at their availability that can act as the class of drugs is a narcotic antagonist, but basically work to undo the effect of an overdose. But if we don't get that far, we're better off.
That's right. And, you know, next time I come, I hope we can bring some EMS folks with us. We've had them present to us. And Narcan or Naloxone is this what's called an overdose reversal drug. Mm-hmm. It is now available at many pharmacies in town. Some insurances will pay for it. Grand Lake Mental Health also received a grant and is able to give out some Narcan kits. These are the nasal spray, which mm-hmm. make it very easy. You just spray them.
Just because the tissue there is readily made to absorb, so it works real.
And trust me, it's not fun coming out of an overdose.
No.
So it's not something people are going to be real happy about, but you know what? They'll be alive.
Yeah, absolutely. If people would like to find out more about either topic, you're available, and there are other points that we can refer people to, right?
Yes, absolutely. That Washington County Wellness Initiative website has all this on it.
Okay. Well, Melissa, thank you so much. Some very important stuff this morning. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And again, if you'd like the training on QPR, get a hold of the initiative, and they will get you started. More in just a moment on K1.
Hi, this is Rod McElveen, pastor of Grace Community Church. When we hear the word spiritual discipline, we can easily think, ugh, another duty.